The Offering of Isaac, Test of Faith. This chapter is based on Genesis 16, 17, 18 to 20, 21, 1 to 14, 22, 1 to 19. Abraham had accepted the promise of a son, but he did not wait for God to fulfill his word in his own time and way. God permitted a delay to test his faith, but he failed to endure the trial. In her old age, Sarah suggested a plan by which the divine purpose might be fulfilled, that Abraham take one of her servants as a secondary wife. Polygamy was no longer regarded as a sin, but it was a violation of the law of God and was fatal to the sacredness and peace of the family. Abraham's marriage with Hagar resulted in evil, not only to his own household, but to future generations. Flattered with her new position as Abraham's wife, and hoping to be the mother of the great nation to descend from him, Hagar became proud. Jealousies between Sarah and Hagar disturbed the peace of the once happy home. Forced to listen to the complaints of both, Abraham tried to restore harmony, but without success. Though Sarah had urged him to marry Hagar, she now blamed him as the one at fault. She wanted to exile her rival, but Abraham refused to permit this because Hagar was to be the mother of his child, as he dearly hoped, the son of promise. She was Sarah's servant, however, and he still left her to the control of her mistress. When Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Hagar made her way to the desert. As she rested, lonely and friendless beside a spring, an angel appeared. Addressing her as Hagar, Sarai's maid, he told her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand." Yet words of comfort were mingled with the reproof. "The Lord has heard your affliction. I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so that they shall not be counted for multitude." She was instructed to name her child Ishmael. God shall hear. When Abraham was nearly 100 years old, the promise of a son was repeated. "Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him. As for Ishmael," he said, "behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him a great nation." Polygamy brings sorrow. The birth of Isaac filled the tents of Abraham and Sarah with gladness, but to Hagar, this event was the overthrow of her deeply cherished ambitions. Everyone had thought of Ishmael as the heir of Abraham's wealth and the inheritor of the blessings promised to his descendants. Now he was suddenly set aside. Mother and son hated the child of Sarah. The general rejoicing increased their jealousy, until Ishmael dared to openly mock the heir of God's promise. Sarah saw an unending source of conflict in Ishmael's stormy disposition, and she appealed to Abraham to send Hagar and Ishmael away. Abraham was thrown into great distress. How could he banish Ishmael, his son, whom he still loved dearly? In his perplexity, he pleaded for divine guidance. Through a holy angel, the Lord directed him to grant Sarah's desire. In this way, he could restore harmony and happiness to his family. The angel gave him the promise that God would not forsake Ishmael and that he would become the father of a great nation. Abraham obeyed, but not without keen suffering. The father's heart was heavy as he sent Hagar and his son away. The sacredness of marriage was to be a lesson for all time. The rights and happiness of this relationship are to be carefully guarded, even at great sacrifice. Sarah was the only true wife of Abraham. No other person was entitled to share her rights. She was unwilling for Abraham to give his affections to another, and the Lord did not reprove her for requiring her rival to be sent away. An example for all generations. Abraham was to stand as an example of faith to later generations, but his faith had not been perfect. He had shown distrust of God in marrying Hagar. In order that he might reach the highest standard, God subjected him to another test, the most severe that any mortal was ever asked to endure. In a night vision, he was directed to offer his son as a burnt offering on a mountain that God would show him. Abraham had reached the age of 120 years. The strength of his youth had passed. In the health and energy of manhood, one may courageously meet difficulties and afflictions that would cause the heart to fail later in life. But God had reserved his most trying test for Abraham until the burden of many years was heavy on him and he longed for rest. Abraham was very rich and was honored as a mighty prince by the rulers of the land. Heaven seemed to have crowned his life of sacrifice and patient endurance with blessing. Abraham commanded to offer Isaac.
In faithful obedience, Abraham had left his native country and had wandered as a stranger in the land he was to inherit. He had waited long for the birth of the promised heir, and at the command of God, he had sent Ishmael away. And now, when it seemed his hopes were about to come true, a trial greater than all others was before him. The command must have wrung that father's heart with anguish. "Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and offer him there as a burnt offering." Isaac was the light of his home, the comfort of his old age, the inheritor of the promised blessing. But he was commanded to shed the blood of that son with his own hand. It seemed a fearful impossibility. Satan was there to suggest that he must be deceived, for God's law commands, "You shall not kill." God would not require what he had forbidden. Going outside his tent, Abraham remembered the promise that his descendants were to be as countless as the stars. If this promise was to be fulfilled through Isaac, how could he be put to death? Abraham bowed upon the earth and prayed as he had never prayed before for some confirmation of the command if he must perform this terrible duty. He remembered the angels who were sent to reveal God's purpose to destroy Sodom and who gave him the promise of this same son, Isaac. He went to the place where he had met the heavenly messengers, hoping to receive some further direction, but none came. The command of God was sounding in his ears, "Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love." That command he must obey. Day was approaching, and he must be on his journey. Isaac lay sleeping, the untroubled sleep of youth and innocence. For a moment, the father looked upon the dear face of his son, then turned away, trembling. He went to Sarah, who was also sleeping. Should he awaken her? He longed to unburden his heart to her and share with her this terrible responsibility, but he did not dare. Isaac was her joy and pride. The mother's love might refuse the sacrifice. 3 sad days. Abraham at last awakened his son, telling him of the command to offer sacrifice on a distant mountain. Isaac had often gone with his father to worship, and this brought no surprise. The wood was made ready and put on the donkey, and with 2 servants they set out. Father and son journeyed in silence, Abraham pondering his heavy secret. His thoughts were of the proud, adoring mother, and the day when he would have to return to her alone. He knew that the knife would pierce her heart when it took the life of her son. That day, the longest Abraham had ever experienced, dragged slowly to its close. He spent the night in prayer, still hoping that some heavenly messenger might say that the youth could return unharmed to his mother. But no relief came to his tortured soul. Another long day, another night of humiliation and prayer. The command to slay his son was ringing in his ears. Satan was near to whisper doubts and unbelief, but Abraham resisted his suggestions. As they were about to begin the journey of the third day, Abraham saw the promised sign, a cloud of glory hovering over Mount Moriah, and he knew that the voice that had spoken to him was from heaven. Even now he did not complain against God. This son had been given unexpectedly. Didn't the one who bestowed the precious gift have a right to reclaim his own? Then faith repeated the promise. In Isaac your seed shall be called, a seed numberless as the grains of sand on the shore. Isaac was the child of a miracle, and couldn't the power that gave him life restore it? Abraham grasped the divine word, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. Hebrews 11, verse 19. Yet none but God could understand how great was the father's sacrifice in yielding up his son to death, and Abraham desired that none but God should witness the parting scene. He told his servants to remain behind, saying, "The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you." The wood was laid upon Isaac. The father took a knife and the fire, and together they started up toward the mountain's summit. The young man at last spoke. "My father, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" What a test this was! How the endearing words, "my father," pierced Abraham's heart. Not yet. He could not tell him now. "My son," he said, "God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering." At the appointed place, they built the altar and laid the wood upon it. Then, with trembling voice, Abraham told Isaac the divine message. Trained to obey. With terror and amazement, Isaac learned his fate, but he offered no resistance. He could have escaped if he had chosen. The old man, exhausted with the struggle of those three terrible days, could not have opposed the will of the vigorous youth. But Isaac had been trained from childhood to give ready obedience, and as the purpose of God was opened to him, he yielded a willing submission. He shared in Abraham's faith, and he felt honored in being called to give his life as an offering to God. And now the last words of love were spoken, the last tears shed, the last embrace given. The father lifted the knife. Suddenly, an angel of God called from heaven, "Abraham! Abraham!" He quickly answered, "Here I am." Again the voice was heard, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham saw a ram caught in a thicket, and quickly he offered it instead of his son. In his joy and gratitude, Abraham gave a new name to the sacred spot, Jehovah Jireh, meaning, "The Lord will provide." The promise to Abraham repeated. On Mount Moriah, with a solemn oath, God again confirmed the blessing to Abraham and to his descendants. "Because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." Abraham's great act of faith stands like a pillar of light, illuminating the pathway of God's servants in all the ages since then.
During that 3 days' journey, Abraham had enough time to reason and to doubt God. He could have reasoned that killing his son would cause him to be looked upon as a murderer, a second Cain. It would cause his teaching to be rejected and despised, and thus destroy his power to do good to others around him. He might have claimed that age should excuse him from obedience, but he did not take refuge in excuses. Abraham was human. His passions and attachments were like ours, but he did not stop to reason with his aching heart. He knew that God is just and righteous in all his requirements. Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. James 2, verse 23. And Paul says, "Only those who are of faith are the sons of Abraham." Galatians 3, verse 7. But Abraham's faith was made manifest by his works. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? Do you see how faith was working together with his works, and by works faith was made perfect? James 2, verse 21-22. Many fail to understand the relationship between faith and works. They say, "Only believe in Christ and you are safe. It has nothing to do with keeping the law." But genuine faith will be demonstrated by obedience. The Lord declares concerning the father of the faithful, "Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Genesis 26, verse 5. Says the Apostle James, "Faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." James 2, verse 17. And John, who dwells so fully on love, tells us, "This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments." 1 John 5, verse 3. God preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand. Galatians 3, verse 8. And the patriarch's faith was fixed on the Redeemer to come. Christ said, "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." John 8, verse 56. The ram offered in place of Isaac represented the Son of God, who was to be sacrificed in our place. The Father, looking on his Son, said to the sinner, "Live, I have found a ransom." The agony that Abraham endured during the dark days of that fearful trial was permitted so that he might understand something of the greatness of the sacrifice God made for our redemption. No other test could have caused Abraham such torture of soul as did the offering of his son. God gave his son to a death of agony and shame. The angels were not permitted to interpose, as they did in the case of Isaac. There was no voice to cry, "It is enough." To save the fallen race, the King of Glory yielded up his life. "He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things?" Romans 8, verse 32. Lesson. Book of the Universe.
The sacrifice required of Abraham was not only for his good, nor for the generations to come. It was also for the instruction of the sinless beings of heaven and other worlds. This earth, on which the plan of redemption is carried out, is the lesson book of the universe. Because Abraham had shown a lack of faith, Satan had accused him before angels and God. God desired to prove the loyalty of his servant before all heaven, to demonstrate that nothing less than perfect obedience can be accepted, and to open the plan of salvation more fully before them. The test given to Adam in Eden involved no suffering, but the command to Abraham demanded the most agonizing sacrifice.
All heaven watched Abraham's unswerving obedience with wonder and admiration, and all admired his loyalty. Satan's accusations were shown to be false, and God's covenant testified that obedience will be rewarded. When the command was given to Abraham to offer his son, all heavenly beings watched each step in the fulfillment of this command with intense earnestness. Light was shed on the mystery of redemption, and even the angels understood more clearly the wonderful provision that God had made for our salvation. See 1 Peter 1, verse 12.